Welcome to the Unapologetic Woman podcast. My name's Pauline Vanique, and with my co-host Donna Lee, we're sitting down today and talking to Jerry Madungit about her experiences as a Filipino-American growing up in Chicago, being the eldest of four, and her love for Nani from Lilo and Stitch.
So my name is Jerry Madungit, and I graduated from Syracuse with a bachelor's in computer science, and now I work as a software engineer at the NASA Ames Research Center. It's in Silicon Valley, so I moved all the way from New York to California and trying to just live my best life. So that's it.
So when we asked you to do this podcast, we also asked you to pick a woman of color character that you connected with in TV, movies, and you chose Nani. Can you talk about the reasons that you chose her and why you connect with her so much?
Yeah, so when you asked me to choose a character, I was actually debating between like several movies and characters, and I for some reason I only thought of animations. Like, when you posed that question to me, I only thought about animation. So I was like, my three were like Pocahontas, Mulan, or like Lilo and Stitch, or like Moana, like any of those, because obviously I related to them more as like an East Asian, like Pacific Islander ethnicity. So I related to them more culturally. And when I listened to your podcast last time, I didn't even realize we could have picked movies that like that outside of animation and things like that, but I guess it was because I related more to the animation and like the artist like animation of it and like the color and everything. I think it was like more real for me, and those were the only movies I was allowed to watch when I was a kid. But I guess I picked Nani because I feel like as an older sister, so I'm the eldest of four, I related to her most because I would always fight. I have three younger sisters and I would always fight with them, but I was always had this responsibility of being the eldest. And it's so funny because I remember watching that movie and I was saying like, oh my God, Nani is kick ass. Like, she's athletic and she's so strong and independent. Like, she always wore a crop top. And then I remember in high school, I wore a crop top every day. Like, that was like my style because of that. Like, I just would wear a crop top all the time. But yeah, I related a lot to her because I feel like she was like a woman. They were like, they showcased a lot of women of color, like Lilo and Nani. And like, they had realistic body standards and they didn't make a big deal about it at all. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to say push an agenda, but like they didn't push it as like, oh, like this is like a woman of color animation movie with like ideal body types. It's just what it is. Cause sometimes I feel like movies who do have women of color as the main character, like sometimes they have to go into their like history and heritage versus like, let's say like white people's main characters in other movies, like, oh, it's just their personal problems, right? But if it's like a woman of color, it's like, oh, we have to give you like a slight history lesson or something like that. So that's what I liked about
when it's a white, yeah, when it's a white character, you have to like explain their existence, yeah, like, versus like a woman of color character. Do you also, when you talked about like pushing an agenda, do you think like how you said you, when you first were thinking of characters, you only thought of animation characters,
mm-hmm,
do you think like movies made for children like are like are even less likely to like be obvious about their lesson versus movies like made for adults, I guess? I don't know, like,
yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of animation movies are really obvious in what their lessons are, right? Like you know, Tangled, or I'm trying to think, like Frozen, like those were like clear themes of what those messages were, and they're really good messages, right? But I think what I really liked about movies like Lilo and Stitch, right, was that that wasn't the point. Like, that, you know what I mean?
So, just a little bit of background about Lilo and Stitch, the movie, just in case, I'm guessing most of the audience has already seen it or know the plot, but just a tiny overview for those who haven't. Lilo and Stitch is a movie about a young Hawaiian girl, Lilo, who is raised by her older sister, Nani, finding an unexpected friend in an unexpected place. The twist is that friend is Stitch, who's a blue alien experiment built for destruction and is running from the Galactic Federation. So, just your normal day in Hawaii. Yeah.
Obviously realistic.
So, in the movie, Nani's 19, and she takes care of her little sister, Lilo, as a sort of parent slash sister, but more like a little bit of both, right? And we see her trying to, like, balance her life out between being, like, a normal teenager, but also trying to be a parent to Lilo. And she's still growing up, but she has to act like an adult. And we see, like, from several scenes in the movie, how she grew up, like, in little glimpses. So she had, it seems like she had a great childhood. She surfed, she hung out with her family, and those things really shaped who we see her, how we see her in the movie and who she is. So can you tell us a little bit about your childhood and how it shaped you into the person you are today?
Yeah, so I guess I grew up in a traditional Filipino family, Catholic, and I guess I wasn't really allowed to be as adventurous as I wanted to be. Like, as you can see in Lilo and Stitch, Lilo just runs amok. I'm pretty sure she's 6 years old, so I don't know, like, how that would be possible, but I remember growing up, really traditional family, like, you know, social norm gender roles with my parents. My mom would work part-time and do a lot of the housework around the house, and my dad, he would work full-time, and I think he would make travel trips. So he wasn't as home a lot, and so because he wasn't as home a lot, he wasn't able to help a lot in the house. And for me, I feel like those roles really showed me and, like, shaped me of, like, what I wanted to be, and especially, like, where I wanted to be in specific with, like, my relationships, right? So I remember being in school and, seeing that there weren't a lot of females in specific, like, places, like, the robotics club or the computer science classes or, like, specific things like that. So it's so interesting because I've felt that I didn't really like how those roles were placed, not because of interest. I actually joined those, like, computer science class and robotics, not because I was interested in it, because I had no idea what they were, but just because, like, I wanted to, like, see females. I wanted to put myself in there, right? And I feel like over time, I actually did really enjoy STEM. I enjoyed math in the beginning. Like, I always liked math, and I never thought I could do it professionally. but I ended up going through with it, and I guess for my love of STEM and pushing the barriers of specific places made me who I am today.
So, like, when did that, you said you didn't think math could be, like, a professional career. Like, when did that change for you?
Right. I mean, when I was a kid, I was, like, really competitive with math. I remember we would used to, I don't know if you guys had this game where everyone stands up and then you compete with, like, two people in the room. And it's like, oh, 1 times 12, and someone who says the answer first.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I would, like,
I was very
I
slow.
Was really good at that. I was really good at that. But mostly because my mom, she actually, we would stay up, like, late at night, and she would, like, she would test me on the times table, whether I liked it or not. Like, we would just stay up all night, and she was like, she would, like, recite the times table to me, and I'm like, this needs to stop. And she's like, no, you have to memorize it. But then I actually really enjoyed it when I won those competitions at school. Because, I don't know, it made me feel really proud to be like, oh, I'm so good at math, you know? And did the times table. A complicated...
Wait, so, like, what... so, What came first? Your mom asking you to repeat the times table, or you enjoying the math competition in class? Do you know?
Oh, I think my parents were like the first. They were the first to like push me. They were the first to push me in STEM in general, like in school in general. Cause I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess I wouldn't have pushed myself to like study until my parents did. And then I think that adopted into my like habits of like studying really hard for like, you know, exams and stuff. I don't think it was like forced upon me. Mm-hmm. It was just like their like habits adopted into like my habits. I completely forgot the original question. I don't think I answered it.
No, I think it flows well. Like we're like jumping around a little bit, but that's fine.
So there's like the stereotype that Asian, especially like Asian immigrants, I think are pushed more into STEM either by like their family or like by society, or like they're more inclined into it. But then it's also like very conflicting with the idea that women aren't more inclined to go into STEM. Like, how do you see yourself sort of compromising those stereotypes, and like how does that play a role in like why you chose the career that you did?
Yeah, that's actually so interesting, because there is like an Asian stereotype. I don't even know where that came from, where all like Asian people are good at math.
Yeah, because that's not true for me.
So I guess like maybe when I was a kid, like I felt like, oh, if I wasn't good at, because I feel like there was like a lot of people, like if you weren't good at math, right? When I was a kid, I remember my friend, she's Korean, I remember she would always say like, oh, I'm a bad Asian, because she wasn't good at math. And I feel like I remembered a lot of people saying that, like, oh, I'm not a good Asian, like, because I'm not good at math and stuff like that. And that's just so weird to hear, because it's like, how can you be a bad ethnicity for not having, like, a specific skill? Yeah, but I guess me pushing myself for STEM, because, like, my parents didn't push me towards STEM. They pushed me to be good at school, right? So they would always make sure I was being good at, like, math, science, English, like, yada, yada. It wasn't like, oh, I want you to go to STEM. It was more like, oh, I want you to be in school and then be a nurse, that kind of thing. But I think that what my parents is, they didn't really push me towards STEM. I, like, found STEM on my own. And then I feel like because of Asian stereotypes, I also pushed myself to be good in specific subjects, because I also felt that burden of like, if I wasn't good at math, I'm a bad Asian, or like I want to, it sounds so terrible, but I feel like when I was a kid, I was like, I want to like live up to these stereotypes, because if I'm not, I'm being a bad Asian. Now that I think about it, it's so bad.
Yeah, because I feel like compared to other stereotypes, a stereotype that you're good at like a subject that it's agreed upon that it's like intellectually challenging, it's a weird thing to want to disprove, because you like, do you know what I mean? Like, what are you gonna do? Just like prove like, oh, I'm not good at math. I'm just like, that's like a weird thing to like
and then like I guess like there was so many attachments, right, to like being like an Asian shy woman, and like I feel like I really played into that stereotype when I was younger. And then Lilo and Stitch was like, oh my god, Lilo is so adventurous. Like, Lilo and Nani were both, like, I feel like they were just, like, people not associated to, like generic Asian roles who are, like, shy type women. You know what I mean? And, like, if they were being, like, not that role, like, they didn't have to put, like, because I feel like there's so many, I don't know if you noticed this, but I was reading this thing where badass Asians in movies or TV series have to have, like, a streak in their hair. Or
yeah,
have to be,
yeah,
like,
the purple hair. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like, what?
So, I think that's interesting, because I'm Filipino too, but I grew up, did you grow up in an area where there were, like, lots of Filipinos or lots of Asians?
Yeah, I grew up in an area with lots of Asians, the only Filipinos in my area were my cousins. So, like, it was funny. Because they were like, oh, I know a Filipino. He's like, yeah, it's my cousin.
So I grew up in an area that didn't have a lot of Filipinos, right? But it was diverse. And mm-hmm. there was, like, lots of Mexicans, lots of refugees. And I never saw myself, like, as Asian growing up, necessarily. Like, people would call me Asian, but I never, like, associated myself with, like, what you would consider or, like, what people would imagine first as Asian, right? Like, so, like, Japanese, Korean, Chinese, like, those three, the big three. So it's interesting how you say, like, you wanted to live up to those stereotypes because you didn't want, you wanted to prove to yourself, like, you were as good as that, right? Do you feel like there's... Yeah. Like, would you consider yourself as, like, part of that, I guess, falling under, like, that branch of like, what people would consider as Asians, like, when they first think of them? Or do you consider yourself, like, as Filipino and, like, there's a distinction? Because, like, even with culture, there's that distinction, right?
Right. Yeah. I do, like, so it's so weird because I know a lot of people who... like are not Asian but think Asians do fall in that big three, right? Oh, if you're Asian you must be like some Chinese, Japanese, or did you say Korean? I'm not sure. Yeah, so sometimes I think like for the most part I actually like identified as Pacific Islander because I felt more tied with that kind of culture and like Latinx culture. Mm-hmm. And because, like, you know, like, our food and our language is all, like, derived from Spain. Yeah. Or, like, Spanish culture, right? So, like, I never felt really attached to, like, stereotype Asian culture. But, like, Asian is, like, a whole region, right? You know what I mean? It's, like, to say, like, European culture. Like, it's so hard to, like, tie it down to one thing. Because, like, Asian, like, I feel like it's... Asian people are like composed of so many different countries, like you said, and like I think like if they want to identify me with as Asian, that's fine with me, right? But for me, like personally, I identify as like Southeast Asian, mostly because that specific group has like a tied culture, right? And then I would also identify like as like Pacific Islander, right? And like I really feel closer to like more like Latinx cultures because of like our food and our language than like the language and like food of like other Asian cultures. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's an interesting conversation because like growing up, There is this controversy, like, are Filipinos Pacific Islanders or are they Asians? But then I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, honestly, what does that even mean? And it goes back to, like, how you guys were saying, like, you felt like you had to live up to the stereotypes of, like, oh, Asians are good at math or Asians are, like, they're a model minority, right? There's that model minority myth. But I never felt like mm-hmm. that really applied to Southeast Asians and Filipinos because I feel like, we're not on like the same level as like the big three in terms of like how much money you make, like what kind of educational background, right? Like I think I remember reading a study done how like Southeast Asians have the highest high school dropout rate like amongst minorities in general, and that was like pretty shocking to me because growing up everyone was like, oh, you have to go to college because Asians are smart and they go to college and they become like valedictorians in high school and like all these things. And so it was like a lot of pressure growing up, but I feel like with that comes like a sort of invisibility for like Southeast Asians or just and the whole like blanket term of Asian is just very like,
so actually someone told me that at Berkeley, right? And I don't know, like I think more universities are adopting this where, so before, right, you had to fill out if you were like African-American, white, Hispanic, Asian, blah, 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 that kind of identified your, like, economic stance, you know, your, like, financial situation and also, like, your ethnicity, right? So at Berkeley, they actually divided the Asian into subgroups mm-hmm. because there are sub-economics. So they found that, like, people who were Southeast Asian, which include, like, Vietnamese, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Filipinos, they actually fell under, like, a lower sub-economic group, like you said, than other Asian groups. And they wanted, because they found that that this sub-economic group actually were in the same group as, like, Black and Latino people. So, like, they wanted to, you know, they, like, split it up like that, which makes sense. So it's, like, interesting to see, like, if a lot of people don't know or don't see the division, it's weird to see how, like, they can place you into this huge group of Asian when Asia yeah. is, like, the majority, technically,
yeah.
you know? And it's divided into so many things.
So I was born in the Philippines, and I came to America when I was, like, mm-hmm. 8. And I remember coming to America, and I knew English, but it had, like, a heavy accent and everything. And I remember, like, my first class, second grade class I went to, someone made fun of the way I said three, because I said it like tree, not three, like the number. yeah. And that experience sort of shifted my whole, like, understanding of, like, language and, like, assimilation into the American culture. And so I felt like I needed to lose a lot of, like, my culture in order to fit in as American. Did you ever feel like that growing up?
Yeah, I mean, it was so funny growing up. I grew up in, like, a predominantly Asian and white community. And, like, I don't know, for my parents were very, like, they wanted me to be American and they didn't want me to be different. So growing up, mm-hmm. they actually didn't teach me Tagalog or, like, I don't know, a lot of, like, different, like, Filipino culture things, because they didn't want me to be different at school, or they didn't want me to be made fun of. And I remember, like, not even, like, knowing that I was, like, Filipino, you know what I mean? And, like, I don't know if that, like, makes sense, but, like, not really. When I was, like, I remember being in kindergarten and preschool, not knowing, like, what ethnicity really is, right? And then, like, I remember someone, like, was like, oh, you're Native American? And I was like, yeah, I guess. Like, and then, I was like, I guess if that's what I am. And I remember for the longest time, not the longest time, until I was, like, until first grade, I remember thinking I was Native American. It was the craziest thing. I guess after first grade. No, but it was so funny. It's like my parents, right? They wanted me to be American. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't, yeah, so they wanted me to be, like, Americanized, but they didn't want me to be American, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
They didn't want me to act like, so in my household, right? Like, if I, like, acted a certain way, if I acted against them, they'd be like, what are you doing? Why are you acting American? I'm like, what do you mean?
My parents did that too, yeah.
It's like this American culture of yours. I'm like, whoa, relax. I just want to go out with my friends, like that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think your relationship with your Filipino identity or other parts of your identity change as you grew older? Like how you were talking about, like, did you have to resist against your parents wanting you to be American?
It's so funny because so, like, I feel like I thrived off being different. Like, I thrived off being tanner than pretty much everyone else at my school because I was different, right? And then my sister, on the other hand, like, the one, like, right after me, she actually didn't do well with it. Like, she felt really, like, too dark. Like, she would hate it, and she would always be like, oh, I don't want to get darker. So it was, like, I don't know, like, what contributes to, like, us feeling differently about it, but it was, like, the different ways we grew up about feeling about our Filipino heritage or our skin color. And I guess, like, I always embraced, like, who I was as, like, a Filipino person. And then as I grow older, I, like, I like find more things about like my identity or Filipino heritage, and like, cause my parents are from like a region in the Philippines that's not like, that's different than other regions in the Philippines. So it's like, even in that subculture, it's like interesting to learn about that. Cause like, I don't know where what region your parents are from.
They're from like different places. So my dad is from Bulacan, which is like close to like Manila. And then my mom grew up in like a small island province. And then where I grew up in the Philippines is like a small town that's like further from the biggest city. So it's like all over the place, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny you were saying how like you felt like you embraced Filipino culture more than your younger sister. So I have an older brother, and he was a year older like when we came to the United States, and I feel like a year isn't that much of a difference when it comes to like age and like I think understanding, but the way we tackled like assimilation into the United States and like the American culture was like very different, right? Like my brother was so like, he felt like he was Filipino and he wasn't ashamed of that. And I remember, and even now, like, he still has like a better like grasp on the language. Like, I can't really speak it very well. Like, there was a really heavy American accent, and you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't want to speak it because I'm embarrassed to speak it because I have an accent. And I remember, like, when I was a kid, I wanted to like be as American as possible to fit in with the other kids. And my cousin, we were at like a family party or something, and she was like, "You should keep like speaking the language now, or else you'll forget it, and then in the future when you're older, you'll regret that." And I remember thinking, "Ugh, I will never regret this," and now I do. Because like I wish I had better fluency over the language, and like, I think it's interesting, like, with the differences, like, how much younger is your sister?
Oh, so she's only 2 years younger than me.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I wonder if that's, like, something to do with, like, because you're the oldest and you feel like you have to embrace your culture more. But I feel like two years, one year, that's not that big of a difference.
Yeah.
But it really, really is when it comes to, like, how we see the world, I guess.
Yeah. I also feel like maybe it's, like, right, other people, like, how have other people interacted with you to make you feel it impacts your relationship with things, right? So like, I feel like a lot of people were like, oh, like, what are you, or you know what I mean, like, oh, where are you from, or something like that. And for me, like, I feel like that would be offensive to a lot of people, right? But for me, when I was younger, it actually got me excited because, like, I was like, oh, I'll tell you what I am, you know, that kind of thing. And where I grew up, like, there weren't, like, a lot of Filipinos, so they would be like, Filipino, like, what is that? And I was like, I'll tell you what it is. But obviously, like, for a lot of people, that would offend a lot of people, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I just recently started feeling iffy about that question, like, ever since college and, like, learning it started to feel more like, eh, at college. I'm not good at describing my feelings, but,
Well, I think that has a lot to do with the college we went to.
But, like in elementary school, I would, like, people wouldn't even ask me. And I would just talk about being Vietnamese. Like, I would show up in, like, on, like, we'd have, like, a culture day. And I would show up in, like, the traditional Vietnamese, like dress that, like, little girls wear. And I would ask my mom to bring in egg rolls. And, like, I would do a host presentation on Lunar New Year, Vietnamese New Year. But that started to cut away after after college.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely depends on the environment you grew up in. Like, I remember even before, like, that classmate had made fun of the way I, like, my accent. Like, I had that, like, lunchbox experience that Asians have. Like, my mom used to pack me lunch. And then I opened it, and it was, like, adobo or something. And someone was like, what's that? It smells. And I remember, like, and I was, like, a very shy, very introverted kid. And I didn't want anyone to look at me. I didn't want to be any different. And then when someone said that, I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, I can't eat this. And so my mom would pack me lunch, but I wouldn't open it at school. Like, I wouldn't eat that lunch. And, like, I think those, like, formative experiences really shaped it, how I looked at, like, Filipino culture when I was younger. And, like, it's not until, like, college, I think, that I grew more appreciation, because then I met Filipinos and, like, saw that people weren't ashamed of their culture.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually had the same experience as you. Remember, my mom came as a chaperone on a field trip, and she brought, like 100 show pows. And me, personally, I don't like show pow. So I'm like... I was like, of course, you bring the one thing I hate. All these other kids are going to hate show pow. And they actually, like, all loved it. But I was so embarrassed. I was like, I can't believe you brought this.
Okay, so you talk about your younger sister that's closest to your age. But you have three younger sisters, right? Mm-hmm. Do they all have different relationships with your heritage? Or do you know? Or, like, is that something you talk about with each other?
Yeah, so my youngest, my youngest sister, it's like I'm Nani, right? Well, bringing it back to Lilo and Stitch. the youngest sister, she's 14. So the age gap between us is pretty big. But she is actually the most, like, integrated into Filipino culture. So, like, we actually as a family go to the Philippines almost every year, if not, like, every other year. And, like, whenever we would go there, she would actually go to school there, my youngest sister. And, like, I think she really enjoyed the culture, like, more than me. Like, me being in, like, Filipino school, like, I did not like it. Like, I did not enjoy it at all. And then for her, like, she really liked it and stuff like that. And I think she got more integrated with it. But it's, like, so interesting because, like, my parents are from Bohol. So it's, like, they're Cebuano. And it kind of sounds like Tagalog, but it's not, right? It's, like, a different language. So it's, like, even if you spoke Tagalog there, like, it might not be, like, perceived. So it's, like, especially not English and sometimes not Tagalog. So, like, you really have to know that, like, specific language. And my sister, like, picked it up pretty fast. But I didn't, because, like, I watched, like, teleseries and they were all in Tagalog. And the only thing I really had any resemblance to was Tagalog. So even if I was speaking bad Tagalog, like, they didn't understand me. So that was, like... So that was just bad. But I really enjoyed, like, knowing where my parents are from, because it, like, really shaped who they are. And I feel like for me that really shapes who I am. And I think a lot of people would say, like, as children of immigrants, like, the way their parents grew up shaped who they were, right? For me, it really shaped who I am, like, knowing that my parents were immigrants and, like, doing what I could do to, like, make them proud because of where they came from, right? And then for my other two sisters, like, they weren't really, like, tied to, like, Filipino culture, like, closely, if that makes sense. Like, they didn't really want to, like, learn the language, or, like, they were just like, oh, I'm Filipino, that's that. Like, you know, so they were, like, Filipino-American, like, more American, right? Like, how they identify, they just, like, identify as more American. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so going back to the Nani and her positions as Lilo's sister and her main caregiver, as the oldest sibling, I think you talked about this a little bit before. Did you ever feel any pressure as the oldest siblings for your
sisters? Yeah, I always felt like I had to be responsible, and I would feel bad if I wasn't responsible because I was the oldest. And it always, like, I always feel like it sucked being the oldest, because I feel like if I was the youngest, I would really be out here thriving. my little sisters learned, like, all the mistakes I made, like, all the mistakes I made with, like, my parents or anything I would do, like my parents would make a big show of it, like, Jerry made this mistake, you shall never make this mistake. So my sisters, like, never made the mistakes I did. And I feel like being the oldest, for Nani, like, she was struggling with so many things. She was, like, struggling in, like, Hawaii's depressed economy, like trying to find a job, mm-hmm. and that, like, she couldn't, like, it was hard for her to keep a job, and, like, at the same time, like, fighting, like, what was his name, like, Bubbles, Mr. Bubbles guy. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Mr. Bubbles. Wait, which one?
Do you know who I'm talking? Jumba? No, not no. Jumba. Mr. Bubbles, the social Gantu? Worker who was like, I'm gonna.
Oh, Koba.
Okay, yeah. The one who was like trying to take Lilo away. Okay.
She's like, I'm gonna take Lilo away. And I always, like, I don't know why I related this to it so much, but I would always, like, feel, like, so sad because, like, I remember, like, my parents would always be like, oh, don't misbehave, or, like, the social workers are gonna take you away. And then for me, I was like, no, like, I don't want them to take me away. And then watching that movie, I was like, no, they can't take Lilo away. And so, like, I just remember watching it, but it was so funny too, because, like, Lilo was such a brat, and, like, I feel like I was a brat like that too. And, like, even interacting with the sisters, right, Nani and Lilo, whenever they would get mad at each other, they were, like, brats to each other. And then I would relate so much to that when I, like, me and my sisters, like, used to, like, bite and fight each other. Like, I would try to, like, scratch her and, like, all these things. But I love her.
There's a line between when Nani's a sister versus being a mom, right? And apparently we're reading, they had to change something in the original movie script because test audiences were confused about and thought that Nani was Lilo's mother. So I wanted to, like, ask you, like in the case, like, a case like this, like, what's the distinction between a sister and a mother and a friend?
Right, yeah. I think when you are the older sister, like, I think, or when you're the eldest, personally for me, I feel like I've adopted, like, motherly qualities or, like, parent qualities because I was the eldest, and, like, I do, like, so, like, I do support my sister right now financially, and so, like, for me, like, I feel really, like, another caregiver of the sister who's closest to me, and so, like, I feel like so, I don't know if, like, this is, like, an Asian thing, but it's, like, a lot of Asian families, in my opinion, like, don't share their feelings out loud, if you ever heard of that. So, like, I feel like, so there's, like, I feel like there's this divide, right, in Asian families, like, the parents and the children. And so, like, I feel like the children, like, they all, like, talk, and, like, I feel like they understand each other more, and then, like, the parents, you know, they're, like, the authority. So, like, all right, so, like, the mother, right, like, she's your mom, and she'll have, like, those motherly, like, qualities, but it's, like, also she's, like, the authoritative figure in terms of, like, you can't cross her. I feel like my sister could cross me, so, but at the same time, like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like my sister does need something, like, she'll, like, come to me, you know, with, like, help, like, if she was, like, in danger, but there's, like, a hesitation to come to our parents about, like, anything, because, like, we don't want to worry them, and they're, like, you know, the bosses, so.
So, obviously, family is a big part of the movie, and in the movie, they say, like, Ohana means family, and family means no one gets left behind, which is, like, very iconic, but in the movie, like, Stitch, Jumba, Pleakley, they're obviously not related to Lilo or Nani. They're not even human. And yet she still considers them Ohana.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they're not human. I can't get over that. Do you feel like you found Ohana outside of, like, your blood relatives?
Yeah. So, like, when I was young, my parents would always say, like, blood is thicker than water. And if I ever wanted to, like, hang out with my friends, they'd be like, oh, why are you hanging out with your friends so much, like, blood is thicker than water or something like that. But for me, it was like, I loved, like, taking care of my friends, and my friends were, like, my Ohana, right? Like, I would find, like, a family within my friends. And just for watching that movie, like, seeing that, I feel like resonated into, like, how I wanted to, like, go around like having my friendships, like I wanted them to be a part of like my family, right?
So in the movie Nani, it seems like from what people have said, like she was a surfer, and that was like her, that was supposed to be her career, but then she had to leave it because she had to take care of Lilo. And then from personal experience, like I majored
I didn't know that.
Apparently, like people have like those theories because like they see her posters and like it's supposed to be her, and that's why like they surf a lot, and yeah, so it's like she gave up that dream in order to take care of her sister, and like from personal experience, I like majored in international relations in history in college, and I like worked up really hard to like pursue a career relating to like something with politics, but then 2016 when the current administration came into office, I became like very disillusioned with that life, and I sort of dropped everything and like moved on to something else. Did you ever question leaving like what you're doing now or computer science in general?
Yeah I think I always questioned that when I was applying to colleges, right? Like, oh, well, am I like applying to these STEM majors because I feel an obligation to like be like very successful for my parents, like in what they want me to become, like a type of person, or like am I doing because like I was like in college, I mean in high school, I was really interested in art, right? I took like all the art classes, and like I even applied to, I can't remember what school, but I applied to one school in painting, like to major in painting. But like I guess I was just so insecure about like not doing a major that my parents would be like insured. Like I feel like if I took painting, my parents would be so worried, and I didn't want to worry them, so I did take STEM. But at the same time, I really did enjoy STEM, so I didn't feel like I was being forced to be in it or anything like that. And then I always thought like, okay, well, for me, like I believe like it doesn't really matter what you major in college, because like what you're gonna do after, you could do anything, right? I always had that mentality, like, oh, get your degree, and then after college, just do, like, what you need to do or whichever you want. So, yeah.
In this movie, it seems like there's a lot of, like, women leader figures. So you have strong and complex characters like Lilo, Nani, and even in the Galactic Federation, the leader is a female, the Grand Councilwoman. Did you have female characters or female figures in real life growing up or even now as an adult?
Yeah, actually, I feel like I didn't really have a lot of female leader roles like I saw. Like I said, like because of my parents' like traditional gender social norms in terms of what the mom has to do, what the dad has to do, I feel like because of that, like I wanted to be different, right? Like I wanted to be like in a more leadership role, and I wanted to like see more females, especially women of color, in leadership roles, because I feel like just growing up the way I grew up, and like I think it was just important for me to like, I guess, be proactive in who I was, so that, I don't know, not to like better the community, but just to like, you know, like it was like my, I almost felt like it was my role to be like, as a woman of color who can like do STEM, to like step up and try to be in a more leadership position.
Did your parents ever tell you to like, you have to be a leader?
Oh no, they like were just, they didn't like push me to do anything like extracurricular. So when I did extracurriculars, they didn't really see the point of it, like especially for like college applications or things like that. They just like wanted, they just, all they really cared about was like the grades, like the grade report. He's like, oh, what are the grades? And I'm like, you know, so yeah, I think just seeing them in their roles and wanted me to like just oppose to be in like a different position.
So like they're drawn differently than other characters, animation characters of the time, and even like now I'm having difficulty thinking of like another female body that's drawn like that besides like Miss Incredible, and she, so, like, was that something you were conscious of when you first saw the movie, or, like, can you talk about how do you think that drawing style, or even, like, that there were, like, their skin tone was darker, than the traditional, like, Disney character, like, how that affects the viewer, or,
I think when I was younger and I was watching Lilo and Stitch, I didn't realize, like, all the body types in it, especially, like, I was, like, rewatching some scenes, and, like, Lilo was taking pictures of all the people on the beach, and her, like, curiosity with, like, the tourists, and, like, she's, like, they're all so beautiful, and it's, like, these really awkward pictures of people, like, up close. But I guess, like, I didn't realize, like, how well, I guess, that movie portrayed body types, because they're really realistic looking. Like, Lilo's, like, a little chubby baby, and that's what babies look like. They're all chubby. And I guess I didn't realize it then, but, like, now that I realize it, I really appreciate it.
So, Lilo and Stitch is obviously this huge phenomenon. I don't think I, like, experienced that as a kid because I wasn't in America yet. But I assume, like, in 2002 when it came out, it was, like, huge because it made over $270 million, which is a really big draw, especially for, like, an animated movie. And even, like, over a decade later, a lot of people still place a lot of importance. And, like, a lot of people tell me that it was a formative film for them growing up, right? And the movie itself bolstered tourism in Hawaii, and in 2011, Disney even opened their own resort in Oahu. And now, like, you can go and visit, like, the fictional town, or not the fictional town, but the town that Nani and Lilo grew up in, right? Like, they were fictionally based in. So it obviously, like, drove a lot of tourism into Hawaii. But I feel like there's also this general understanding amongst, like, not only native Hawaiians, but also, like, people around the world that are native or indigenous, that visibility leads to commercialization, which can lead to, like, the degradation of native indigenous cultures. Do you think that there's a line between exploitation and representation, and, like, where that line would be?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like that story I was telling with my coworker, that would be, like, the difference between exploitation and, you said, appreciation, right? So I feel like while showcasing, like, Hawaii and, like, Lilo and Nani's, like, life as, like, Native Hawaiians was, like, really good in showcasing that, I can see, like, how that would put a lot of commercialization in, like, Hawaii, but I don't know, like, if I would say it's, like, exploitative, like, if that was what that movie was intending to be, you know what I mean? But I know there are clear lines between, I don't know if you would, like, say exploitation is synonymous with appropriation, or would you say exploitation is more extreme?
I think exploitation would be more extreme. So, like,
right.
I guess it would go back to, like, would this movie change if it wasn't Hawaiian, right? Like, would the core story change?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Because, like, originally, apparently, like, Lilo and Stitch was supposed to be set in Kansas, which probably would have been an entirely different story.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Like, is it because that they're ethnic that people, like, that this movie made sales? Is that what you're saying?
Or, like, I guess, why do you think, like, Disney made this movie the way they did? Like, why did they pick Hawaii? Why are Lilo and Stitch brown? It's kind of like, why did they make Moana, you know?
Right. That I guess, sort of, like, thing. I don't know. I'm not sure, like, why, but I'm just, like, guessing, right? So maybe it's because, like, all the princesses that look the same, and then they wanted to target a different audience, maybe like a small Jerry in Chicago that wanted to see something else, right, and grow up with that. But I guess Yeah, I see what you mean. And I know, yeah, there is a clear line between, like, using another person's culture to profit out of. And, yeah, that's a good point. I never knew that. I never knew that Lilo and Stitch made so many sales.
Yeah, no, I didn't either.
And we looked it up. I didn't realize it was such a popular movie.
Yeah, I don't, like, obviously there's not, like, a clear cut answer to that, but like we just wanted to get your opinion because like it's definitely not something like people think about. It's just I don't, like after like reading about the movie and then also like watching documentaries on how like the native people of Hawaii are living now and like how most of them are in poverty or like they can't find enough housing, it's just an interesting thing to see that like TV and movies can have such a large impact on how people live. Like, it's not just something that you watch and it's, like, fun, but it's, like, real-life consequences. So, we're wrapping up our interview, and we wanted to ask you something that we ask everybody because we are unapologetic women. So, what is something that you want to be less apologetic for? Something that you think women should be less apologetic for?
I think... Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so, like, at my work, right, I was working with this other female from the Florida office, and, like, we were taking, like these different objectives from our manager, and he was like, oh, can you do this instead of this? And my coworker said, like, oh, sorry. And I was like, you don't have to be sorry. And she was like, yeah, I guess I don't have to be sorry. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's just, like, a change. There's no reason you should be sorry about that because, you know, I think, like a lot of females are very apologetic in their work. And I feel like sometimes, like, you should be more confident in your work because, like, what you're like, in your place you are now because there's, like, a reason for it, right? And, like, you should be more confident in the work because the more confident, like, the more people, like, rely on you, in my opinion. And, like your opinion would matter, you know what I mean? So, like, you should never be apologetic for your work.
What advice do you have for our younger audience or even yourself, like, a few years back?
I guess do it. Don't be afraid, just do it, Nike.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one, I would say. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to the third episode of the Unapologetic Women podcast. We had so much fun talking to Jerry today. All of our social media and all of our social media are linked below. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Thank you. Until next time.